All righty, folks. I'll call this regular meeting of Cleve County Board of Supervisors to order. We'll begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Dahl, do we have any changes to the agenda?
No, unless you want to make an adjustment.
We're going to drop number three down below number four. And so that's going to be the only change that we're going to do. Do I have a motion for the adoption of the agenda?
I move that we adopt the agenda with the change mentioned. Three will be roll call.
Motion made by Mrs. Booker, seconded by Ms. Eager. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0-1. Mr. O'Brien is on the way, and he is hopefully driving safe. All righty, Mr. Dahl.
Yeah, let's get to the next spot here. All right, Mr. Chair, members of the board, there's a few things to report to you this evening. Some new employees starting, Janaya Booker. She started October 31st as a social services specialist too in the social services department. I'm glad to have her on board with the county.
She's not a relative.
Let me kind of move this out of the way here for those that want to scan if they're online by chance. So just some things that we have coming up, you know, every year. Well, not every year, the last 2-3 years. I think this is the third year now, Mr. Spitzer?
Yeah, that's correct.
Third year, so we're doing Pleasant Grove's Community of Light Celebration at Pleasant Grove Park. So again, they'll be doing it December 15th through the 18th. And again, it's a holiday light drive-through loop at Pleasant Grove Park. It goes from 5 p.m. until 9 p.m. The event is free and open to the public. So again, Parks and Rec, they're looking for businesses, organizations, groups, clubs, scout troops, churches, families, or anyone that would like to set up a family-friendly holiday light display. If anyone is interested in doing so, they can set up, and Mr. Spitzer with Parks and Rec just asked that they register online, and it's free at fluvanna.recdesk.com. Fluvanna Parks and Rec will supply electricity. Deadline to register for the event is noon, December 9th, 2022, or there's also the QR code here on the screen, and all these co-ed reports go online too, so anyone in the community that wants to look at it after the fact, they can get the QR code and get the information from there. But again, you know, every year he keeps on building upon this. You know, this kind of started as an effect of COVID for people wanting to get out and do a light celebration, and people could kind of go through in their cars and, like I said, looking to get more sponsors and more people setting up light displays this year. And again, it's free to the public. Let's see here. On Thursday, November 10th, there was a story time with a veteran program, which was hosted by the library and sponsored by the Daughters of the American Revolution. So 26 people attended and listened to Miss Aaron read two stories about Veterans Day and talked with Jim Childress, who is a veteran of the Navy, and Fred Lewis, a veteran of the Army. Again, both local veterans.
Got to add something. His son posted his 96th birthday today.
Wow. Really? That's for Fred Lewis?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Lewis.
Mr. Lewis, okay. So yeah, like I said, you know, a great event to kind of connect the younger generation with the older generation and kind of, you know, learn a different little point of view. There were crafts, coloring books, and more things going on there. Again, like always, Ms. Hoffman in the library does a great job of kind of provide lots of great programs for the kids and connect them with adults in the community. So big kudos to her. So the Palmyra boat ramp right up there in Palmyra, right kind of right by the bridge. So they're going to be doing a major kind of renovation on the boat ramp there. So it's going to be starting November 21st, 2022. It's undergoing renovations. So the project is expected to take around 4 months to complete, allowing the boat ramp to open up back in early spring, just in time for the weather to kind of be better and for the river to be flowing. So anyone with questions regarding the Palmyra boat ramp renovation, please contact Virginia Department of Wildlife Resources. Ed Carr can be contacted at 804-367-8311 or Brad Maurer at 540-980-9940. Let me just move this and maybe you can see it better. Mr. Spitzer, are they going to be doing like gravel or pavement there?
I think it's a paved parking lot and zero entry into the water with sides on the with a place on the edge to be able to fish off of on the bay.
Yeah, so you can see right here, it's a little hard, I apologize, it's a little small, but you can see there's, and my eyes are horrible, I can't see, but I believe that's supposed to be a paved parking lot right there.
It looks like they got about 15 parking spaces.
Yeah, and you can see they've got kind of this, zero entry kind of ramp going in there. You know, there's something like that there now, but it's a little rough to get into. And it looks like they've got some rock aggregates, and it looks like maybe they'll be doing some, potentially doing some launches from the downside of the river, potentially. But I can't really tell.
Right now, they're doing something that desperately needs to be done.
Yeah.
Because where they're putting that rock down there next in the river, it's washed away up against the boat landing and up against the boat ramp, and it's rather harrowing to get on that.
Like I said, you know, and this is a good thing. You know, this is really this is kind of the main landing spot in Fluvanna. Obviously, we have Crofton up there, but anyone wanting to do a day trip from Crofton down to Palmyra, this is usually a good day trip. So I think it's a much needed renovation and improvement that they're doing for that boat ramp and boat landing. Any questions on that? So we have a couple community meetings coming up here regarding some rezonings for up around 250. So for Wednesday, November 30th at 6 p.m., there's a community meeting, and it's going to be held at the Beaver Dam Baptist Church, which is at 1794 Richmond Road. So what's being proposed? A materials recovery facility to process and recycle building materials after the demolition of old brick and concrete buildings. SB Cox has existing facility locations in Richmond and Yorktown. This site was previously the LKQ site and zoned I-2 at the end of Memory Lane. A special use permit would be required for this proposed use. One thing, and I'm not sure if the board is interested in doing anything, you know, if the board wants to do a field trip by chance, to take a look at the facility. Again, I think there's one in Richmond and Yorktown that says, so if the board wants to do that, we can try and arrange for something like that. Just, you know, if there's concerns about, you know, kind of what the general appearance is or sound or just, I guess, the general nature from a cleanliness standpoint, we could arrange for that if the board's interested.
Yeah, I'd be interested in
that. Yeah. And so, Mr. Miles, have they submitted yet?
They'll be submitting this week, yes, sir.
Yep, so they'll be submitting this week, so it'll kind of be moving forward starting December, but they wanted to host their community meeting first. So, again, we can try and get something set up for the board if they want to see that, and I'll maybe just send out an email and anyone that indicates they want to go, or if they want to go on their own, we can arrange that as well, too. So that's Wednesday, November 30th. We have two more community meetings also regarding some rezonings up at 250 area. Also, so the previous one was Wednesday, November 30th. These two are being held Thursday, December 1st, the next day. One's at 6 p.m. and one is at 6:30 p.m. And they're going to be held in the county administration building in the Morris Room. So the community meeting for 6 p.m., it's a B1 rezoning for farm machinery sales and a feed and seed store on the north side of Route 250 and west of Zion Station Road. So again, that community meeting is going to be held at 6 p.m. And then at 6:30, there's a rezoning, an I-1 rezoning for small business office warehouse buildings to be located on the southwest quadrant of Route 50 and 250, sorry, Route 50 and Memory Lane.
250.
Yeah, Route 250 and Memory Lane, right on the corner there. So again, that one's going to be held the same evening at 6:30 p.m. So any questions from the board on any community meetings coming up? And then just some of your upcoming meetings that we have. So Wednesday, December 7th, we have a 5 p.m. regular meeting. Wednesday, December 21st, and I forgot to add this in here, but it's we're going to have nonprofit work sessions. So remember, you know, the nonprofit work sessions, we're going to be splitting them up between, some people have been coming, you know, periodically here, but some of them will be having split up between three different meetings. December 21st, January 4th, and then January 18th. So again, your upcoming meetings, December 21st, you have a 5 p.m. work session. So 5 to 5:30 would be nonprofits. Then at 7 p.m., you'll have your regular meeting. January 4th at 5 p.m., you'll have your organizational and regular meeting. And then, you know, kind of try and have that go from 5 to 6:30. Then at 7 p.m., there would be nonprofit presentations on that evening. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that the board has about any of the meetings.
Any questions?
Aaron, will Santa Claus be at the activity?
Yes, he's planning to be at the light show on Saturday.
Okay, wasn't in the agenda. I just want to know. A lot of fun.
He's always
Santa
fun.
Is there.
Well, he's not having there on Saturday night.
He's looking to see who's naughty and nice.
And it's so easy to do. You just go on your computer and find your picture and copy it.
All right. The one thing I will say is we just need to make sure that when we're in the nonprofits, because we have a certain block of time, we have to make sure that we keep them at one time.
Yeah.
And that we don't carry over late.
Yeah, we were talking about it today. So I think we have roughly, around 25 just for...
Total
for rough numbers. So if we divide it by three meetings, that's eight nonprofits a meeting. And so the nonprofits are supposed to be held to kind of like a 5-minute presentation. And then that would allow time for the board members to ask questions. So again, you know, if you have eight nonprofits, 5 minutes times eight, that's 40 minutes. And then
if we go 10 minutes apiece.
If you go 10 minutes apiece,
it would be right there.
You'll be right there for the 90-minute interval that we're planning for that.
Right.
So that's the game plan. So.
All righty. Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we got out of order a little bit. Next up on the agenda is going to be a special presentation, a resolution posthumously honoring Jaquetta Murray Keaton.
And so, board, first, before we move forward with the resolution, before we read the resolution, one, we need for the board to adopt the resolution, and then we'll present the resolution to the family. And again, I've got the resolution. I can pull it up on screen. But
I'm going to go ahead and read it.
Yep.
And it reads as such, a resolution posthumously honoring Jaquetta Murray Keaton. Whereas Mrs. Jaquetta G. Murray Key was a dedicated resident of Fluvanna County, lending her time and considerable talents to support and advocate for her community. And whereas Mrs. Murray Key was a dedicated community servant in her 22 years as a Fluvanna County resident, serving on numerous committees and taking on many leadership roles. And whereas Mrs. Murray Key was appointed to the Fluvanna County Planning Commission in 2018, and was a thoughtful and engaged champion for effective planning. And whereas Mrs. Murray Key was a passionate supporter of Fluvanna County Public Schools, serving as PTO president and remaining active as a parent and as a community leader. Whereas Mrs. Murray Key was elected as a representative of the Fluvanna County School Board, served with commitment to the students, educators, and families of the community, was a champion for equity and excellence in education, and demonstrated a commitment to listening, being prepared, and working together to seek solutions. And whereas Mrs. Murray Key was made an indelible mark on the county and the many lives she touched. And whereas Mrs. Murray Key was a beloved and well-respected member of the community, a musician and dedicated member of her church, a community leader and a devoted wife, mother, and cherished friend to all she met. And now, therefore, be it resolved on the 16th day of November 2022 that the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors does hereby posthumously recognize Jaquetta Murray Key for her dedicated service, compassionate leadership, and many contributions to the County of Fluvanna. With respect and gratitude, she will be missed. Be it further resolved, the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors extends their sympathy to the family of Jaquetta Murray Key and decrees that the family be furnished a copy of this resolution. The foregoing resolution was duly and regularly adopted by the Board of Supervisors, Fluvanna County, on this 16th day of November 2022. Do I have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors adopt a resolution posthumously honoring Jaquetta Murray Key.
Second.
Got a motion made by Ms. Booker and seconded by Mr. Fairchild. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. We ask the family to come down to present that. I also would like to recognize that we do have some guests here tonight. I'd like to thank the current FLDP class. If you would please stand, be recognized, that's here tonight. How many of you folks are in the FLDP class? We do appreciate all y'all's time and work. I didn't know he was going to stand up. I wouldn't have said that. Anybody not on stage?
I've been having such a hard time making it to class, they all just came to me.
All righty. I will now open up the first round of public comment. Anyone wishing to address the board, we ask that you state your name, address, keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and direct it to the board. Is there anyone present that would wish to speak at this time?
Good evening, supervisors. Rudy Garcia, 802 Ravana Woods Drive, Fort Union, Virginia. I come before you tonight to ask you to favorably consider the application for Bree Key for replacing her mom on the Planning Commission. You've got a really good crop of applicants for that position right now. And I think the one thing that separates Bree from the rest of them is that she brings a very distinct perspective with her commitment to the community for the last number of years, her involvement in community activities, and the fact that she brings a perspective of a young person to the Planning Commission. And all the stuff that's going on in the planning world right now, it's going to affect the young people more than it's going to affect the older people. So I would just ask you to favorably consider her moving forward. Thank you.
Is there anyone else? Seeing no one else in the room, is there anyone online?
Let me pull up the video panelists to make sure you have it. Looks like Ms. Radford.
Ms. Radford?
Good evening, how are you?
Fine, ma'am, how are you?
Good, bless, thank you. I'm another part of the FLDP, but I've elected to stay home tonight for reasons I probably show with my face on here.
Name it, please.
Oh, yes. Sandra Radford, 121 Mulberry Drive, Palmyra. Sorry. I've been here so many times the last 15 months, I should know that by heart. And I do want to say my comments are, I think, good ones for the most part. Last week, the Planning Commission met to recommend approval of two zoning actions for parcels near Zion's Crossroad to go into our commercial development of that area. I read the project staff report. I was very pleased to see that the description included detailed part of the Article 24 of landscaping and tree preservation for the county. Will be a nice screening application on this industrial site. I reviewed all the residential and commercial concept plans in the Lake Monticello area of 2019-2021. None of those had at all any kind of comment about screening and tree preservation and landscaping other than along the line of screening will be in accordance with Article 24. That was about it. So to have this detailed depth of that proposal was very enlightening. I also went through the ones in 2022, both Wolfpack and Johnson LLC took great pains to give you a lot of information about their buffers and how they're setting up their plans. And I think that's a way to go. Several businesses along Lake Monticello Road have not provided adequate screening, especially as you read what is required for the landscape plan. I take that part with one small piece on Article 24 that an 18-inch shrub does not make you screen, and that is written in the plan. These businesses actually represent a blight on the county, the rural character of the county, especially at a time now we're trying to bring tourists into the area to generate the economy. It's my hope and recommendation that you will charge the planning department to revisit those businesses I mentioned along Lake Monticello Road and have them do something to put more adequate screening in. There's another new one, Christian Enterprises is going to put a large vehicle-like equipment on contractor yard in there that have no idea what's going in that either. A good time to get on top of that before it comes to fruition. But if we can bring them up to code, or the county can do something, planning department can do something to make sure they make code and make us more attractive to our visitors coming throughout our communities, I think that would go far to help us bring in more tourism. Thank you for your time and thank you for your service.
I want to comment to that. I think since those are already passed, we can't go back to the landowners, correct? On the ones you just mentioned.
No. Whatever the law was,
I said, but we can't increase it. The agreements are
go back
place.
And increase things. Not unless they have significant amendments to the plan.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am. Mr. Kelly, go ahead.
Thank you so much. James Kelly, 363 Manor Boulevard in Palmyra. I'm here today as the elected member of the school board for Palmyra in the chair. Last week, the school board got together for our usual meetings and considered making a request to this board with regards to what to do with carryover funds. And I know that you all are remarkably generous to us as a board. You provide what we need to run our school system to make sure that we can attract good staff, make sure that we can keep the staff we have. And we do our best to run a tight ship and to return as much money as possible to you all at the end of the year. This year, unlike, I would say, any year that I can recall, the board was actually somewhat unanimous in terms of making a request to say, if you have the money available, these are some priorities that the school system sees as needs. And I know that, I believe Mr. Dahl was there that evening, and I don't expect you all to be aware of what we vote on in any given moment, but I did want to perhaps recap and emphasize the items that we saw as important to the school system, and so thank you for indulging me. I made the motion myself and rank ordered the items and received a 4-0 vote with one absent, and the order of priority was we asked for $100,000 for the public address system at the high school. This is a safety consideration to make sure that we are able to make announcements in the school system. I'm being told it needs severe upgrades. And so that is the first item in priority in terms of ensuring safety in the schools. The second one was that we made a motion to ask you all for funds to upgrade 12 buses, the newest with the least mileage, in order to put air conditioning in them. We all know that we start early in the year. Summer is hot, and we've had some pretty vicious days last year in which students have come to school soaking wet, especially during the times in which we are required by federal law to wear these. And, you know, we are replacing buses through your generous CIP plans and other funds and only buying those with air conditioning, but there are still too many buses on the road without. And so we asked for, in that motion, 12 buses at 12,000, which is 144,000. I was remiss. The actual first item that we prioritize is the fact that, much like the county, we are seeing looming increased costs for fuel. And our division is estimating that we may have a $300,000 overage. Now, we have I can't speak to the contractual language. I'm not an attorney. But we have a fixed price. I believe that we work with the county together to buy fuel. And our provider is telling us that they may not be able to honor those costs and that those are going to drive up. And the division is estimating that there may be as much as $300,000 increase on that. And not to say that $544,000 that I just articulated isn't enough and isn't remarkably generous, but to the extent that there are funds remaining, and because this was ranked fourth and final from the board, if possible at all, we would love to move our bonus structure in alignment with the county. It's my understanding that in order to do that, it would be about $500 per full-time staff for $300,000. And because I misspoke and probably need new glasses here, I'll reiterate in order that the motion was to ask you all very humbly for $250,000 to offset the fuel cost, $100,000 for the public address system at the high school, $144,000 to upgrade 12 buses with air conditioning. That would be $12,000 per bus, and the 12 buses to be selected by virtue of their age and the lowest mileage. And then finally, we estimate that it would cost $300,000 to bring our bonus structure for the school employees in alignment with the state. So I thank you all for consistently funding the school system and giving the money that we need in order to educate our students and try to reward our staff for the remarkable job that they do. And I know that you expect and routinely receive $1 million plus from the school system at the end of the year. And that's because our finance director and our administration work really hard to work as leanly as possible. So thank you all so much. Thank you.
And just, I was at that school board meeting, and so just as a kind of a, so the schools are, have about $1.3 million that they're gonna be returning back to the county from fund balance of unused county funds. To address the diesel fuel, again, that'll probably affect, so the way fuel is, the schools buy all the fuel, and they've got a contract for all the fuel. We get our fuel at the same facility that the schools do. Now, this is more specifically diesel fuel. So most of the county vehicles do not run on diesel fuel, but we certainly have a lot of fire and rescue apparatus that do run on diesel fuel. So, you know, some of the discussion was there is, and I don't know the ins and outs of it, but there's a contractual agreement of a price that was locked in, and so I'm not sure, just from my standpoint, without knowing all the ins and outs of their agreement, I'm not sure how they could go, how a contractor, if there's an actual agreement, how they could say midstream that we're going to change what we're doing. Now, again, there's probably more to that with actually looking at the agreement, and that's, again, that's with the schools, but it could affect the county and what the county does. But to go back to the carryovers, I think we're envisioning bringing those back to the board at the next meeting. I think we just received the carryover request from Ms. Gillum, Brenda Gillum, a day or two after the school board met last time. So that'll be coming forward. So just some information for you on that.
All right. Is there anyone else wishing to speak at this time? Come on down if you. Still a public comment. Still a public comment.
Yeah, I was trying to say, maybe you might want to wait. Sorry, go ahead.
I'll say that then.
Good evening, board. I'm Andre Key. I live at 17 Ashton Road. I'll just ask the board to consider Bree Key for the Planning Commission position. She's a young, vibrant female. She will consider, you know, all perspectives. She'll be somebody who will be dedicated to the board, do her homework, and be prepared. So I'll just ask the board to consider her for the Planning Commission.
And I will add this just at the end. This is, if you're here as a applicant for the Planning Commission, we'll ask you if you'd like to speak then. So you'll be feel free to come up and speak when we call those. That's not something for public comment. That will be more centered around that time. Is there anyone else wishing to speak this time? Seeing none, we'll now close first round of public comment. Next up is public hearing, AFB 2101, SAH LLC, Shannon Hazlett, withdrawal from North 640, Jason Overstreet, Senior Plan.
Good evening, board.
Good evening.
All right, so this is AFD 2201. This is a request to withdraw tax map 29, section A, parcel 42, and 8.39 acres from tax map 29, section A, parcel 37, total 19.62 acres from the North 640 AFD. The North 640 Agricultural Forestall District consists of approximately 2,295 acres, and the subject parcels are fronting on Slaughter's Ford Road. They're generally north of Hayden Martin Road, and they're located in the Rural Preservation Area and Fork Union Election District. So the request to withdraw tax map 29A37 and 8.39 acres of 135 acres, and tax map 29A42, which is all of that, which is 11.23 acres. North 640 totals said 2,295 acres. The BOS renewed this AFD on January 22nd, 2020 for a 10-year period to be reviewed again in 2030. This general location, this is the entire AFD, North 640 AFD, and you can see the two subject parcels are outlined in red. Aerial image, 2018 aerial imagery, same two parcels, this highlighted is, in orange.
And this right here, running along here, this is a Slaughter's Ford Road.
That's Slaughter's Ford Road, yes. Correct.
And
that's a 90 degree bend?
Yeah, that's a 90. That's a sharp 90 right there.
So the, okay. This illustrates the two parcels to be removed. So all of parcel 29 to A42, and then just the area in red, which is approximately 8.839 acres of the larger parcel. So proposed new land use won't have an adverse effect on farming and forestry operations in the remaining portion of the district. The new land use, which is not really changing, it's still A1. The land use will be agriculture. It's in compliance with the most recent approved comprehensive plan. The proposed land use is consistent with public interest in the county and not solely to serve proprietary interests of the landowner requesting withdrawal. And the land use was not anticipated by the landowner at the time the property was placed in the district. There's been a change in conditions or circumstances since that time, which has necessitated the need for Mr. Hazlett to remove some of his property from the district. So the AFD, the Agriculture Forestall District Advisory Committee, met on September 20th and recommended approval of the withdrawal 5-0. And then we went on to the Planning Commission to have a public hearing on October 11th, and they recommended approval withdrawal 4-0. Hearing.
All right. Does anyone have a question?
What's that? What's that a slaughter for? Is that on? Where the house is on? But I see the public hearing. Yeah.
It's on the north side.
It's that side. It's
the north and east side.
Yeah.
So right here, you've got a lot of the smaller, but I mean, you've got a lot of the houses that are kind of right there, mm-hmm. and it's right across the street from that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Are there any other questions from staff? I mean, from the board? None? All right, hearing none?
So did we not have to have the public hearing?
We have to have the public hearing, yes, sir.
Yeah.
I'm going down through my thing right here. Then it says questions of the podium. Then is the applicant present?
Yes, sir.
Is the applicant to come forward and then. If we have any questions for him, you'd like to say something, Shannon?
I'm Shannon Hazlett, 1330 Hazlett Lane. Anybody got any questions? Mr. Overstreet made it pretty simple.
Yeah, I mean, anybody have any questions for Mr. Hazlett? All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, Shannon. All right, hearing none, I will now begin the public hearing. Please keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and direct it to the board. Does anyone wish to speak to this public hearing at this time? We got to check online.
Don't see anyone raising their hand.
If you wish to speak, please raise your hand. If not, we're going to close the public hearing. Take one more look. Okay, I see no one with hands raised, so I'll now close the public hearing. Are there any questions or comments from the board?
No, I would just, for the benefit of the FLDP folks, let them know that the information in Mr. Hazlett's request was in the package. The board members would have read that and kind of looked at the whole overview. So that's why there were really no questions being asked, not that we're not thinking about the issues.
I have to give the opportunity.
That's right.
All right. If not, do we have a motion?
Well, I'll mention that, so I'm going to vote for it, but I'll say one of my concerns is that having the Ag Forestal District is how we balance out when there's pressures for others and from how many to do so. And one of the reasons I feel okay about voting for it is that there's been very few historically from what I've been told when this comes up. So I'm a little bit concerned about setting precedents while I know that Shannon's being honest and has a need that I'd vote for it.
So. I haven't known too many Hazels and weren't straight for it. All right, do we have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve AFD 22-01 request to withdraw tax map 29, section 8, parcel 42, and 8.39 acres from tax map 29, section 8, parcel 37, totaling 19.62 acres from the North 640 Agricultural and Forestal District.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion's been made by Mr. Fairchild and seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. All right. Next up, action matters. Resolution to change the name of Starling Drive to Grass Court. Mr. Donald.
Yeah. So, there's a resident that has a road going through solely through her property. And so she has requested the current name. So on Starling Drive is the current name of the private road serving two parcels and three dwellings owned by Blount Land Trust. Renee Blount, trustee of the Blount Land Trust, requests Starling Drive to be changed to Grass Court. The requester has submitted a signed letter requesting the change and is aware they're responsible for the cost of the new sign and its installation. And again, just getting an estimate, the cost should not exceed $200. So if you look right here, here is Starling Drive right there going through here. And here are the, I think it's the three parcels. You can see all these parcels within here are owned by the requester. And again, there are some properties on the site, but those are properties on her site and she rents those out. So she is the owner of all the parcels that Starling Drive runs through. And pretty simple, but I think, if you have any more technical questions from how it's done, I'm sure Brett can answer those.
All right, any questions?
I don't have a question, but I do have a comment. I met the owner many years ago, Mrs. Blount, when she was applying for a special use permit for her tennis court. And I'm not sure if very many people are aware, but she's a famous tennis player. And I was on the Planning Commission at the time, and I asked her, do you have something I could show the Planning Commission so that they would know about your achievements? Well, she gave me, I think it was Time magazine, and I think she was on the front. She has played doubles with Arthur Ashe, and she's a renowned tennis player. And you can see there's a court on her property in the bottom left. And so I understand her wanting to change the name of this road, or her driveway, actually.
Well, that just tells me she must have really liked Wimbledon.
And she did have a larger tennis court there covered, but I think the weather took it at some time. But so I understand why she would like to change the name.
The grass court?
Yes, she does. She gives lessons. Even now, she offered to come over to my cousin camp that I have annually and give her 10 grandchildren a tennis lesson. But anyway, that's just, I just wanted the audience to know that's a special person.
All right, I'm sorry. I was sitting there trying to figure out when she played. I thought, she played with Arthur Ashe. It had to be when I was a kid. Yeah, the early 80s, 70s. All right. Are there any other questions or comments? Do we have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the resolution to rename Starling Drive to Grass Court.
Second.
Motion's been made by Ms. Eager and seconded by Mr. Booker. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. All right. Next up is C, Deer Hunt for Handicapped Hunters, Pleasant Grove. Mr. Payne.
Mr. Chairman, this is old business. We've had this for 7 or 8 years now. I didn't participate last year. It's the same organization, really sports and affiliated with the National Turkey Federation. I understand we're going to have probably 7 guns, and each one of these people will be a handicapped in some fashion. I think most of them are wheelchairs. For those of you that may not remember, this hunt was arranged, was the idea for it was really belongs to the sheriff. And his idea was, we sure are losing a lot of police cars to get deer on the road. We got too many of them. and to handle that is you shoot through the nose so they don't reproduce as fast. And it occurred to me it would be good to do it as a charitable measure rather than just opening the tumor. So that's what we're planning to do. Mr. Sheridan has participated in this as a part of the what I'll call the crew. And Mr. Spitzer has been very...
Mr. Spitzer has been in charge. Yes, he's done a great job.
It's the Wheel of Sportsman does have liability insurance. So the county would be immune anyway, but it would protect anybody else that might be in a problem.
And obviously we close Pleasant Grove Park.
Close hand.
Well, at the main entrance.
At the main entrance. From a dog park, they leave some of those trails open.
All the trails are closed.
They shut down all the trails.
All the trails are closed.
Yeah. Dog parks.
All of the three pins at the dog park are accessible.
Yep. But all trails would be closed during that time. And just on this map here, is this where the blinds are going to be, Mr. Spitzer?
I'm sorry?
The blinds?
Yeah, those are the seven blinds.
Yep. So these are the locations of the seven blinds. And again, they close... Again, you know, some of these are, you know, still a pretty good distance away from the dog park, but you don't want anyone going into the trails coming back up to this way. So
they're oriented specifically with safety in mind, so that everything has a good background.
Shooting downhill,
and well, usually shooting downhill, but certainly not shooting up here.
Correct.
Certainly not shooting toward any buildings, occupied buildings or roads. The shooting positions are in pop-up lines, so that if you're not familiar with that, they're basically like tents. And the shooters are there, and they don't move around. Their mobility is very limited, so they wouldn't anyway. But we don't like them to move around because we don't want to know where everybody is, what direction they're shooting. So, and you can see. If you look at the map, where the lines of fire are, and they're generally into heavy woods, and almost always, you know, almost every case, they're downhill. So we've been pretty successful in the past. It's varied from year to year. We've killed as many as
seven. One year.
I think we killed eight.
Did you get?
And I know because I cleaned six of them. It varies from year to year. I think we only got, that's what I did.
And the hunters come from varying different places. One of them is actually a gentleman who's in school between Chris and I. Was a teammate of mine on the baseball team. Had a car accident. So.
The guy that organizes it is named Robin Clark, and he's, I don't remember his position's called, but he is a high organization position in the Wheel of Sportsman. He does all the organizing in terms of people. Mr. Spitzer, God bless him.
Grunt work.
Puts up the blinds and takes it down. It's been successful. I hope the sheriff will tell you that it's saved some of the wear and tear on the cars.
Well, I will tell you this much. I have seen a nice one across the road. He almost became a hood ornament on my bus.
The date is going to be the 29th of December. That we have been doing it the last Friday of deer season because does are legal. Well, does are legal for a period before that.
This year they're a long time.
We want to encourage killing the does because that's better for population control. Occasionally we'll kill a buck, but it's pretty rare. I can only recall one of them.
What do you do with the meat?
They take it with them.
They take their own.
Oh. Well, some of them don't, but we arrange for the meat to be used by somebody. In a couple of cases, one shooter will give his to another shooter, and either that one may have two, or he may have gotten one for himself. So they
try to make sure each one of them goes. With somebody, goes home with somebody.
Most of them have people to help them, to come with them, and if they don't, then we help them get through the line. field dressing, and I'm beginning to think the older I get, the fewer I would have.
Like I said, the three of us are there for grunt work, and there's not a whole lot glorious about what we do. We're there to drag and field dress and then go do it again.
There is one thing that I think I might mention because it's come up, and I don't think anybody's objected to this, but one of the things that we have done, and I think this is essential to the business, is we, the assistants or operators, whatever you call us, at least one or two of us will have a firearm with it. And the reason we do that, I bring a rifle with me, and the reason for that is I've had it in case somebody forgot his rifle, forgot his ammunition or something, we could provide a loaner. And in the other case, we've had several instances where the killing shot was killing, but not instantly. And it's unethical, in my judgment, not to put the animal down as quickly as cleanly as possible. So, lest there be any ambiguity, there is some language in the policies that say Mr. Spitzer can't carry a gun, and unless he's authorized to do so. And I would consider that if you approve this, with this understanding, that would be authorization for the workers to carry firearms for those limited purposes.
Because I will tell you one time, if my former teammate brings his brother with him, and we heard him shoot, he's really good, so we figured something was down. And about 10 minutes later, hear about five pistol shots go off, where Coyote was trying to get to the deer before him. Yeah, so anyway.
That policy really would only affect Mr. Spitzer. I'm not, and Mr. Sheridan's not an employee.
All right. Any questions? Do we have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors authorize the sheriff to conduct a deer hunt in Pleasant Grove for the purpose of controlling deer numbers. Such hunt will be managed by Wheeling Sportsman, a nonprofit organization providing outdoor recreation opportunities for handicapped hunters.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Fairchild, seconded by Ms. Seeger. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Next up are appointments. D, board, commission, and committee appointments. Mr. Dahl.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the board. So just one thing to bring your attention, and I think I've talked to most everyone with the exception of Mr. O'Brien prior to the meeting. So there was one applicant that the method in which the application was submitted was incorrect. It was submitted as an employee application rather than a boards and commissions application. So that application, the incorrect application, was submitted last Wednesday, which was the deadline for the package. But HR, Ms. Snow was out sick last week. So this week when we came in, Ms. Solis just got the application yesterday forwarded to her. So that's why one of the applications for Mr. Bing Spittler was not in the board package. So the board has a couple different options they can do here. I mean, again, so we've got four applicants and four applications that were in the package. We have one additional that I've provided to you. Again, it's not on the right application form, but it provides the information if you so choose to move forward with it. So again, the board can either choose to defer all the appointments. You could just move forward with making an appointment based upon the information that you have. And again, we can pull up all the applications here too, and we have the one additional one as well. You can choose not to, recommend since it wasn't on the correct form, but that's a with the board decision.
I don't have any issues. I would have thought the term would have been the completion of the existing term.
Ms. Solis?
Yeah. It would.
What's that?
The term would end. It's completing.
This is completing the existing term.
Yes.
Oh, so it was a 6-year term?
No, she was just reappointed in June.
Oh, she was. They said she was just reappointed in June.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, gotcha. Right.
Yeah. So again, you have four. So I guess if the board wants to consider the fifth, we have 5 applicants. So first one is Bree Key, second one David Wells, third Eddie Shiflett, fourth Raghvendra Singh, and then fifth Bing Spiller. And so, Mr. Chair, I guess if you want to have anyone speak, or I can pull up applications, or however the board wants to proceed.
Okay. Would y'all rather ask questions now, or let have the applicants that are present and wish to speak?
Have the applicants right here.
Don't we need to first answer what we're going to do about if, or whether we're going to do all 5 of them?
Okay. Does anybody have a problem
with
adding Mr. Spittler?
No, I don't.
I think we had 2 that the applications technically came in after the deadline. So if we didn't do one, we couldn't do the other.
Yeah, Ms. Key's application, as you see in the remarks section, she submitted online and there was an error, and then when the package went up but the package hadn't been compiled to go out, it was noticed that her application was not in there, and so it was brought to our attention that she submitted it but it wasn't there. So prior to the board package going out to the board, we were able to get the last one in there, and then again the one for Mr. Spittler again was just brought to our attention yesterday.
I don't see any benefit in deferring. I mean, I think those are 2 small technicalities that were not intentional on either part.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
It seems to me that we have the information and we need to make the decision. I mean, I will say that we're reading all of the applications. There was a very strong field of candidates here.
Yes, we do.
Are y'all okay with adding the 5th? Okay, mm-hmm. So we're good with that. So is there any of the applicants here and would like to speak at this time? Mr.
Spittler.
I'm sorry.
I'm Spittler.
Spittler, yes sir, come on down. Ms. Key, you come down after him.
Wells.
David Wells.
Without a uniform, I don't recognize you.
Board of Supervisors, I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you, and I appreciate being added to the group. Just for your information, my application was for employment, not seeing the application for a member of a committee online. So that's where the confusion really began. I did hand carry my application over to HR, provided that before the deadline, and was told that they would take care of it. So. I guess they took care of it. My name is Bing Spittler. I live at 50 Wildwood Drive in Palmyra. I am a public servant to a degree, member of the Registrar's Office for Elections, and I'm an officer of elections for the Rivanna precinct. I'm also a former member of the LMOA Board of Directors for 6 years and 3 months. And so I've served the public quite a bit here in the last 10 years of my living here within the community. And I think that with a background in corporate environment, working for 2 Fortune 500 companies, and having come formerly from Ohio, I held a real estate license there in Ohio. So from a planning standpoint, I think I bring some vital credentials to the position. Finally, I would say, and this is probably due to my real estate background, is that I think that it's very important in real estate to have what we call curb appeal, and I think you probably all know about curb appeal. And I think that holds true not only for Lake Monticello, but also for the county. And I believe that I'm trained in looking for curb appeal in all the different areas of real estate. And I think that would be of great value creatively for the planning committee. So thank you again for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Hello, my name is Andre Abriana Key, aka Bree. I apologize, I wrote down what I had to say just in case I got a little emotional from this. I reside at 17 Ashton Road. I first wanted to say thank you all for honoring my mother this evening for her service to this county. It means a lot to my family that her work never went unnoticed, so I just wanted to say thank you all. I'm very proud of all that she accomplished in such a short amount of time, and I could only hope to be half as great as she had been to this county. Secondly, I would like to thank you all for considering me to represent the Rivanny District on the Planning Commission. I have been serving this county for over half of my lifetime, which is only 24 years, by the way, so that's a lot of time for me, but not for that many people in this audience. I founded Pack for Success at age 11. We still do that program to this day, where we collect backpacks and school supplies for less fortunate families in this county. I also serve as a youth mentor for this county for Andre Key's mentoring service. Professionally, I work as a student support specialist, which is basically youth mentoring in Alamar County schools. And I'm also a basketball coach, so I'm heavily involved in the community here in both Alamar County as well. I also have degrees in criminal justice and homeland security and emergency preparedness, and I feel as though those qualities will be an asset to the Planning Commission. I've also been on three boards at my time at VCU the past couple years as the treasurer of Sigma Gamma Rho Sorority Incorporated, the treasurer of the NAACP, and the treasurer of the Black Awakening Choir, all at VCU. So I have been on boards before. I always have and will continue to serve as much as possible. My mother always said, to whom much is given, much is required, and I continue to carry that out. I'm young, and I'm concerned that there are many people in this county left without a voice. After COVID happened, many people in my age group were displaced back to this county to live with our parents. As a taxpayer and registered voter, my opinion matters and is often not heard because I am not represented. I wish to be here for all identities, including race, gender, and abilities. There are hundreds of new families in our county, but our area isn't that family friendly, unfortunately. We need more affordable housing developments for new adults still living at home with their parents because they can't afford to go anywhere else. Many of us would love to stay here in this very place that we grew up and it's all that we know, but we just can't. It's almost impossible to do so. I also care very much about the well-being of our more senior neighbors who seem to get forgotten about. Not all of them have the great savings plans that many people in this county do, but from over the years, but they too deserve to flourish in a county that they've known and lived in for decades. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Mr. Wells?
Good seeing y'all again. I didn't really prepare anything. I'm new to this part of the world. It's a little different for me, but I saw the opportunity. I honestly just miss serving the county. You know, in my time at the sheriff's office, I spent many a nights at various planning commission meetings and board meetings, learning way more about zoning and special use permits and VDOT site alignments, and let's not forget water flow and fire flow and sewage, than I ever thought I would learn as 26 years in law enforcement. I just wanted to be service to the county. I thought I currently serve on the transportation subcommittee for the planning commission, so I have some idea of what's expected. I was just trying to look for another way to serve the county, so I thought I'd throw my name in the ring, and I'd like to, if not this, I'd like to continue to serve in some way. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, sir. We do miss seeing you around.
Yeah, I'm still here there and having now
many times. All right, is Mr. Shiflett by chance here or online?
Let me see here.
Okay. How about Ms. Singh?
Mr.
Singh. No, I'm sorry. I apologize for that.
Nope.
All right. Having none, or, do we have any comments or questions? Anymore? I mean, once again, we had ran into the same thing yesterday when we voted, or Monday when we voted for the officers for Ray Cut. Too many good applicants that we ended up having to ask one to come back next year.
I'll just say, since he's not here, Mr. Singh, I've met him. I believe he's a gentleman that's on the Parks and Recs Committee, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Really, of course, his resume is pretty darn deep in his work for the federal government, and very positive, impressive guy. You don't need to spend but a couple minutes with him to get his energy for the county and the people. So.
I'm in favor of, I'd like to support Bree Key. And I met her when she was in the four-year program in Columbia. And, you know, have watched over the years. And the next time was when she and her mother would put a school bus up at Walmart. And she was very young then, so she's very young. She has had a community mind. And then since then, I've heard a lot of things that she came up here and spoke about that I wasn't aware of. I didn't realize she was on boards. I think she most eloquently spoke about the needs of many citizens when she talked about young people not being able to stay here because of affordable housing. She also recognized the fact that we have seniors who need, we do some things for seniors. I can't say that Blue Valley doesn't serve seniors, but we have to be perhaps a little bit mindful of the needs that our seniors have. So I would support her 100%, yes. She is young, but she came before us, and I saw her as a very mature young person. And I would like for her to have that experience of being on planning commission. And hopefully she can stay here and begin to move up. I know that she's a mentor. Her father is a mentor. Her mother was a mentor. A mentor for boys and girls and families that have tremendous unfortunate situations. And this county should be proud that we do have mentors like Andre Key and Justin Carter, which was a student of mine, that they are there to pick people up and to move them into more sustainable positions. So I would love to see a young person on our planning commission. I think she will be able to bring another element to the planning commission that may not be there now. And I think she would also emulate her mother. They were very close. And I would think that that mother had talked to her about the planning commission and her performance there. So I would love to for you all to give her that opportunity to serve.
Ms. Eager.
I would like to support David Wells. He's been a member of our community and served us for served us well police department. And he certainly has attended a lot of planning commission meetings, and he's someone I think who would take this very seriously and be a good member of the Planning Commission.
There isn't a candidate that I wouldn't support on here. I know many of them personally. They could all do a very good job. But on a night when we're honoring Jaquetta and her contribution to the county, and when we look at the composition of the board as it currently stands, the Planning Commission as it currently stands, I think that there is a very substantial gap, and that youth and energy and that pride in what her mother was doing and trying to do on the Planning Commission at that point in time, and as well as, you know, being a dutiful daughter to see that vision come through, would bring an awful lot to Levanna County. And that is not detracting from anybody else, but it's only to say that I do believe that out of the group of candidates here, particularly on this night, that Ms. Key would be, and as the representative for the Levanna District, would be my preference. So I would like to nominate her for the position.
And I will just tell you, you're exactly right. I would support each and every one of these folks. But I'm sitting here thinking about a conversation I had about 3 weeks ago. I got a phone call from a young man, started asking me about Mr. Key and what my thoughts were about him. And I said, well, I said, he's like a third son. And he said, well, what do you think about nominating him to finish out his wife's term on the board? And I said, I don't think we could find a better candidate. And I don't care political party, race, whatever. The family thinks about everything beforehand. Anyway, I think it would be fairly, very appropriate. But anyway, when Mr. Pullen asked me about that and he asked for his phone number, I said, yes, sir, I got it. And I'll send it right to you. So we have a motion made. Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion is made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0 for Ms. Key to finish her mother's term. And young lady, as long as you smile, your mama will never leave this earth.
And thank you to Mr. Spindler.
All of you. I certainly hope you don't take this as anything against y'all at all. We appreciate everybody trying to get involved. It is absolutely wonderful to see, and I think former Major Wells put it best. I'm not sure exactly what your title is now, so I'll leave it alone. He just wants to serve the county, and I think we have so many people that just want to serve the county, and that's a good thing. That's never bad.
I'm pretty sure they're both graduates of FLDP, too, aren't they? I think they are. I don't know.
Not sure about that. All right, presentations. VDOT quarterly update, Scott Thornton.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, board members, county staff. So pretty maintenance focused time the last quarter. Maintenance crews have been focused on wrapping up mowing, some asphalt patching on some various routes. We had a ditching specialty crew that operated all summer long. They did wrap up last week, and we're going to look at if we want to pick up on that specialty crew next year support our planned contract ditching crew that will be working in the Louisa residency next year. Additionally, crews have wrapped up the winter prep, and, you know, hopefully we don't have a bad winter, but crews are prepped for it. We've got contractors signed up, and you know, just looking forward to making it through another season. Construction-wise, all our scheduled paving is completed. I'm sure most of you have seen Route 15 and 53. We've also had some various secondaries that received the latex work that has been completed. And all of those were completed ahead of schedule. Traffic study wise, Route 708, they're collecting the data and looking to have the report completed early in December, and that is for the speed study. Route 600 safety review around Lake Monticello, that report is in review currently and look to have something first week of December, somewhere in there, back to county staff. A few other items that we're working on, our Stanton TOC and our operations director at Culpeper District are working on developing an outreach program to go to local high schools and do a distracted driving presentation. We had a retirement. Donald Jenkins was the superintendent at Palmyra Area Headquarters. He retired at the end of September, and we have a new superintendent in place. Her name is Anna Cadell. She comes to us from the Richmond District VDOT. She's got over 10 years of maintenance experience, and we look forward and are happy to have her in the Louisa residency. And the last thing I have is we did our quarterly fatal crash review yesterday. Fluvanna County had zero fatal crashes through the first three quarters of 2022. And that's a great thing, and knock on wood, we keep that trend going for Fluvanna. The one thing that stood out is of the fatal crashes and serious injury crashes across the Culpeper District, 45% of those were related to no seatbelt use. So the thing I'll leave everybody with is, as we're traveling for the holidays upcoming, you know, seatbelts save lives, and please continue to wear your seatbelts and drive safely through the holidays. And that concludes my report. Any questions?
I was thinking that we had been talking, we might have already gotten this, and I'm just forgetting it. We had talked at one point about some sort of update on 53 as far as whether it could ever be expanded, or as we're adding all this traffic to the Lake Monticello Beltway, of what that meant for future traffic on 53. Do y'all remember?
Yes, so we are currently working on that with our planning folks, and probably, I want to say February of next year, we're going to be sitting down with all the localities, so this will be on the list to discuss with county staff as far as what we would be looking at to develop a project to do any kind of widening or improvements, and how we would go about funding that.
I believe they're working with Alvaro on that as well, too.
Okay,
we're removing the telephone poles out of the ditch.
Well, that was 250.
All right, I've got a list. Has anybody else got anything?
I just have one question regarding the safety study request. Mr. Thornton, this is Eric Dahl. You know, since we've submitted that request, there's been some additional, you know, serious accidents in that stretch there. I'm not sure how far you all are down or what period you're grabbing data from as far as crashes along that stretch, but we've had some additional since we've submitted. So could you expand on that?
I mean, they're currently wrapping up the report. So do you know when the last, what time frame you're talking about? I would imagine that the last data collection probably happened the end of October, if they were looking at accidents. So if they've happened this month, they're likely not captured. I can talk to our traffic engineering folks and get them to.
The sheriff is making his way down here. He's just not quite as fast as he wants to work.
True that. I'm going from strictly from memory. I didn't know I'd be asked this, but I'm thinking last month when one of our officers was involved in a crash, that same time, last year we were at 35, and this year we're at 55.
And I think besides one of the county staff, I believe there was another accident along that stretch too.
Oh, there's been, right, in that stretch, like I say, from one year to the other, same time period, went from 35 to 55. And there were, I have the numbers, but not in my head, but there were a good portion of them were preventable accidents. But it continues to be our number one place for accidents in the county. And most of it's related to distracted driving. If you're driving speed limit and you're following the yellow and the white line, you're doing fine. But when you look away or look at your phone, you're going to get in trouble really quick.
Or when you do something dumb.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Yep.
I said, past the school bus.
Exactly. That happens regularly. And I know they spoke earlier on that note, I think, and we're talking with the schools too about adding cameras to the school buses, because there is numerous school bus drivers that have come to us and talked about people passing nearly having accidents.
I literally thought about it this morning, because we have, believe it or not, it scared me to death the first time I put the bus in reverse.
Right.
I had a backup camera on my bus. I looked up, all of a sudden the thing lit up.
And it's mainly the main thoroughfares get a lot of complaints out on 15 in the Fort Union area, and then up in the Troy area. A lot of people are impatient trying to get work because they're running late. So, but anyway,
thank you.
Any other questions on that?
All right, I've got about four things real quick, Mr. Thornton. First off, I want to thank you. I asked about that one curb on Route 604. We got about 30 signs put up in about a day and a half. I drove through there, and there's curb signs on every curb. Thank you.
Where is 604?
My road. Covered Bridge.
Covered Bridge.
Covered Bridge.
Okay.
I just wanted to one up there on the top of the hill,
yeah,
right beside the sleigh riding hill, because it got knocked down.
Yeah.
But thank you. It looks great. The distracted driving program, how long does that last?
The presentation takes about 40 minutes, and then they do either a 20 or 30 minute Q&A. They also are trying to work with our local state police and coordinate maybe getting our troopers to come out and maybe bring, they have a distracted driving simulator. So we're still trying to see if we want to get any participation from VSP, but if not, they are equipped to do the class. They have our SSP vehicles come down, and it's a really good presentation. And if you'd like, I can share that with county staff to show you kind of what they've been doing on the other side of the mountain. And we're looking to bring it here so we can get that out in front of our new drivers and hopefully help make an impact.
What I'm getting at is the state has now changed the rules on us. Every student has to go through a 90-minute program, where our school's been doing it for I don't know how many years. They'll invite the sheriff, a state trooper, they'll invite myself because I'm involved with fire and rescue, and mm-hmm. I do the behind the wheel. We do a 90-minute program. It's required for every student before they get the green card to come to it. If y'all could shorten that a little bit, work with the driver's ed teachers, you probably could join in on every high school's program like that, or their video presentation. I'm not sure what. That's just something. If you can share that or reach out to the schools, that's something that would be very good.
Thank you. We'll do that. Thank you.
And I got three things for you. When you leave Palmyra on Courthouse Road, about 10 years ago, the N 40-mile-an-hour speed limit sign got knocked down. It's never been put back up. It confuses my drivers every once in a while. As you go down by the bank and start up the hill, at the top of the hill, it's supposed to have an N 40-mile-an-hour speed limit sign. The pole rotted, whatever. It went down. It's never been put back up. If you could put that one back up.
Yes, sir.
All right. I don't know if y'all do stop the signs at Dollar General, but Dollar General, as you're coming out on the street right there, Jennings Drive, coming up to Jennings Drive, you can see where the stop sign got broken off about an inch out of the ground. There used to be a stop sign there, and there's not one there now.
At our Dollar General, the stop sign is almost down. I thought you were talking
about I'm talking about the one at the lake. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm talking about the one at Lake Monticello.
Mm-hmm.
And Ms. Booker just said that her stop sign is leaning quite a bit, if y'all could check on that one, at the Dollar General in Fort Union. And the last thing, I'm not sure if this is for y'all or for the county staff to talk to the phone company,
but trees on the line between the middle school and Terrace Brook, there must be three or four giant oak trees, and one of them's actually within a couple feet of the road and got the phone line down to the ground. I don't know if that would be a problem where it could fall into the roadway. So I don't know if that would be VDOT or if we talk to Century. But,
you know,
somebody, we need to talk to somebody about dealing with that.
Scott, do you know who does that? I mean, is that the phone company's purview or is that VDOT's purview?
If the tree is touching the utility, we do not touch it. I can get with our land use folks and see who the utility belongs to and reach out to them from our end. But it doesn't hurt for county staff to reach out as well, kind of come at it from both ways. If it's touching utilities, we don't mess with it.
Okay, Mr. Thornton, it's within a quarter mile south of Bethel Church Road on Route 15. There are multiple large oak trees that are across the phone line.
You know, Central
Link
changed its name.
Whomever it is,
right,
we just need to make sure we deal. I'm sorry. I hate to bother you all the time with this stuff, sir, but this is just stuff that I noticed riding around in the car.
Yeah, no worries.
I'll just add that I appreciate that the study is being done on 600 and Lake Monticello Road there at Riverside Drive. I think a study was done a number of years ago, and nothing happened. But it just doesn't—it doesn't take much. It's really about a 3-second delay, and you're going to get T-boned. It's a really dangerous intersection. So
I think we added up Lake Monticello Road at least to the Crofton subdivision. I hope.
Yeah.
Because so. I'm telling you, I drive out of both of them every day, Scott, and I say a prayer as I pull up to the stop sign and I say thank you when I leave that and get out there and don't get hit.
Yeah.
And that's on a school bus. That's not good.
And that's in my little car. It's not good either.
All righty. Thank you, sir. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Y'all enjoy the holidays.
Y'all, you as well. Next up is F, cigarette tax update. Mr. Dahl.
That's just kind of a brief update just so the board's aware kind of where we are since the board implemented that. So again, just for background, you know, back in July 2021, the General Assembly allowed for counties to authorize a cigarette tax, so the cigarette tax rate could be up to 40 cents per pack. Back in April 2021, as localities were kind of looking into this, you know, kind of worked through the Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission to kind of form a regional board. So back in May 5th, 2021, the boards passed a resolution to join that. Spring of 2021, a work group was set up to kind of start that up, look at the cost. November 17th, 2021, the board adopted an amendment to the Chapter 20 taxation part of our code to allow for cigarette taxation. And then January 1, 2022, the Blue Ridge Cigarette Tax Board became operational. Even though it became operational January 1, it took probably about 2 to 3 months for revenues to start kind of trickling in a little bit. And again, TJPDC does serve as kind of the day-to-day operations and overseer disbursement of funds on behalf of the Regional Cigarette Tax Board and the localities. So just kind of looking at revenues, and again, I'll kind of keep this quick. So again, for fiscal year 22, again, the board did not budget cigarette tax revenue back then, because if you remember, for fiscal year 22, that was April of 2021. Cigarette tax didn't start for about until 9 months after that. So for 2022, we didn't budget anything for that. We're going to kind of see how the revenue came in. So based upon some estimates, when the kind of work groups were kind of working through that, the estimate for Flumana for January to June was going to be a little over $100,000, $103,000. The actual revenue for that period came in at $81,885. And if you look at for fiscal year 23, again, fiscal year 23, if you remember, again, the board adopted that in April of this past year. And, you know, again, the revenues were a little delayed kicking in. So what has been budgeted for fiscal year 23 is about $200,000. just based upon a few months worth of data so far, we're projecting about 170,000, which could be, you know, potentially a 30,000 shortfall off the estimates, but
that means people will stop and not smoking.
The chief, if he's buying them somewhere else.
Oh, they're buying them somewhere else, right, but I hope they're not.
No, but there's the enforcement aspect that's being done by the person that TJPC hired is still, it's early stages. I mean, they're not really doing enforcement, they're doing more education at this stage of the game. So they're educating the retailers, you know, letting them know you're not doing this correctly or you missed this. And so it's still kind of in that initial stage. So it's likely that you would see more growth coming into the
other
years.
Yeah, and that's correct. For the Blue Ridge Cigarette Tax Board, there's one compliance officer for my next slide. And there's one more that's down here. There is also what am I thinking of? I think the Town of Madison is also part of the Blue Ridge Cigarette Tax Board. Actually Nelson County is not in it. They backed out. But these are the localities that we're looking at entering. Nelson County is not in it. You can see Louisa County is not in it. So we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. There's 8 with the town of Madison, I believe. So again, there's a compliance agent that started probably about not even 4 months ago, I believe. So again, he's making his rounds, kind of doing, giving some educational reminders to all the retailers that you need to make sure that they're in compliance. So yeah, I mean, I think as time goes on, not that we want people, not that we're encouraging for smoking, but there'll be more compliance with that. So there probably will be some increased revenues to come in on that.
The compliance of what increases the revenue?
To make sure that all the cigarette tax stamps, the dual stamps that has the state and regional cigarette tax board stamps, that all the retailers are appropriately paying for the stamp and the tax to be selling them. So the compliance agent, again, at this point, the compliance agent is not in the thing of trying to put out any fines or put in any tough enforcement. It's more going around and saying, hey, giving you a reminder that if you're not in compliance, you need to be in compliance. And so again, there's one compliance officer for 8 localities. So basically kind of doing a big reminder session, making sure everyone knows what they need to do and they are being compliant.
Was that advised by them regarding projection or revenue projections? So if that curve is there of compliance isn't quite there where it's driving as much revenue, did they tell us that it would be like that?
I'm sorry, I'm not following.
In other words, it sounds like we're saying that part of the reason in lower revenue from it is because compliance enforcement, I guess, isn't where it might be a year from now.
I would say it's partially, I would say, on that, it's a little bit on that, but I will say when we came up with these estimates, again, there's no localities that were really around us that were doing cigarette tax. So the way that the original revenue estimates were based, the city of Charlottesville had a cigarette tax in place. So what we went off of Charlottesville's FY20 data, and then we broke it down to a per capita basis on all the localities on kind of estimating what could potentially be. And so again, it's not a perfect science from that, but there is a locality that was in this region, although a little different from a city standpoint. So those were some of the amounts that we used. And so you can see here for those first 6 months, and I'm sorry, it's a little small, they estimated 103,000. But again, we didn't budget anything for that current year because we just weren't really sure on a 6 month period. And plus we were really into that fiscal year already. And then even looking here, just to, again, we are still using some of the city's per estimates, per pack estimates. And, some of the original estimates were 240,000. We even kind of backed it down. Again, we only budgeted 200,000 out of that. And so again, right now we're showing maybe we're going to be 30,000 short. I think when the year goes, when the year kind of fulfills itself for fiscal year 23, I think we're going to probably be closer than we actually are from a revenue standpoint.
Just blame me. I apologize. We're just doing too good a job in health class getting kids.
That's good.
Well, I mean, if you look at the column, it's just, let's say, an estimated average of packs sold per person.
That would be nice if we had.
Yeah, that's what I would say.
I'm sure you got that somewhere.
Yeah, we do. I mean, the numbers of packs sold going through the cigarette tax board is staggering.
I'm looking at the numbers right here.
I have to tell you that a lot of people just go over the border by Louisa. Pay the tax.
Yeah, but then they buy some food and they do pay that tax. They just don't know.
Buying food when they go to Louisa?
They got meals tax.
Yeah.
That's why you pay about 10 cents instead of 4 cents on the dollar when you buy, go to McDonald's, trust me. Mm-hmm. We wear everything from there.
But I mean, to answer your question, Mr. Fairchild, there was discussion in when we were talking about what the compliance officer would do and what that trajectory would look like. It was anticipated that the first 6 months to a year was more of an educational process for the retailer. Then once the retailers were on board, and the people that were going to try to cheat the system were flushed out, the job would become a little bit more consistent.
And again, hiring the compliance officer took a little longer than anticipated, too. Again, it's a part-time position. I think it's around a 20 or 30-hour week position. And really, a lot of those positions, because there's a cigarette tax board in Northern Virginia, they look for, like, retired law enforcement. They kind of have a certain knack from a compliance standpoint, and then, you know, they can work and do that, and it doesn't affect their VRS, and then they can still get some income while they're still young. So
thank you.
Yeah. So anyway, that's all I have to report on that. Just want to give the board a quick update since it's been in effect here for a while.
I know 30,000 is nothing to sneeze at, but we were really worried if it had been another zero in the back end.
Yeah, I don't know.
This was a total guess. Yeah. I mean, when we came forward and just said, you know, this is what they're saying, this is what they think, back it down.
I think we'll be close to
where we are.
And again, if we're short here, I think they'll be
able to thank Mr. Sheridan.
Thank you. Hey, my bad. All right. Next up, cost of community service, Mr. Dahl.
Yeah, I'll go through this. So again, you know, the board kind of wanted to have a discussion about and get some information on cost of community services. So through some research that staff did, you know, trying to figure out really what that looks like, how do you come up with that? There's these things called cost of community services studies, and there's organizations that do it. So through our research, we found something through, it's called the American Farmland Trust. So they're kind of the main one, the main organization that started these back in the 1980s is when they really kind of started this. So the primary goal is to measure fiscal impact. And again, it attempts to estimate the net fiscal effects, revenues generated minus service expenditures created of different types of new development on a community. So one, just the cost community services studies require methodically assigning revenue expenditures to land uses that the locality uses. So really kind of looking at the model and what it does, it kind of breaks down and comes up with a ratio. So if something is greater than one, it basically says the land produces less revenue than it needs in expenditures, therefore creating a shortfall. So as we get to some charts, again, mostly when you see residential from some of these studies, and I'll kind of clarify some of these, it's generally above one, which from this model means that residential creates more costs than it produces revenue. Obviously, if the ratio is less than one, then the land use needs less in services, producing a surplus. You know, like a business, for instance, in some of the models showing at like 0.35 out of one. So after reviewing numerous results across the U.S. for the different studies, the overarching theme was that commercial, industrial, and ag is generally have ratios less than one, and residential ratios are higher than one. So information from the American Farmland Trust from September 2016 shows the following. So business is on average of about 0.3 out of one, agricultural 0.37, and residential is 1.16. When you look at these studies and kind of look at a more specific at results from Virginia County, because there are some Virginia counties that have gone and had these studies performed, and then they've done these over the past 25 years. I think there's about seven of them. And so again, the results and the average results of those were business was 0.33, agriculture 0.38, and residential 1.18. A little bit of limitations of what these studies cannot do. One, these studies do not forecast future revenues or expenditures. They don't analyze specific developmental proposals, and it doesn't measure non-economic costs or benefits potentially derived from the services. You know, economic impact, social costs, aesthetics, traffic, environment. And it doesn't distinguish between the different types of single land use category, like old neighborhood versus one. So if Fluvanna County wanted to get very specific information, you know, we would have to do that on our own. But that's just kind of looking at these studies a little bit. And let me kind of go back to... So in the board package, there was the information from the American Farmland Trust, and this was kind of a little snapshot of the cost of community services studies. And again, some of this information is what I just presented in the slide. So again, you can see all these sources of studies that were done in different states and counties throughout the U.S., and this is where the data came from. Again, as you look in the residential column, including farmhouses, commercial, industrial, and then working in open land, you know, you can see where the ratios are. And again, as I said in the slide, from this, and again, it's a very pinpointed study. It shows that the overarching theme is that residential has a ratio higher of one, and those others have a ratio less than one. And so that's, you know, that's from a really quick glance. I mean, there's a lot more. I know there was some discussion too that some of these studies don't include other things. You know, one, it doesn't recognize if you have new development, you know, what's the revenue that's going to bring in. It doesn't say what is the additional sales tax it brings into the area if you have residential development. What is the additional potential income tax, local option sales tax? There are other, you know, real estate tax. There are others that this doesn't take into account. This just basically takes a snapshot of saying, here's what you have now, breaking out to the land uses, and this is what it shows. So that's kind of the 50,000 foot view of the cost of community services. But I'm certain that there's other aspects to this that maybe other board members want to comment on.
Question, and I don't know whether, I can't recall if it was in the previous board packet or whether it was just something that you've mailed to us, but you had some other studies.
So there is...
Which I thought were also very good. I mean, the theme seemed common to me, which was that, you know, this is a snapshot moment in time and you can't really take into account the needs and the benefits. And I think it says, it's put very aptly at the end of the first one that you have in the packet there. It says you kind of have to measure all these things in full context to decide whether that cost is worth it or not worth it to you, what the needs of the community are from that standpoint. But I did like some of the methodologies and some of the different points that were being made, so I'm just bringing that out for the public's attention. If you want to put
I mean, so one, just talking about a couple different things, and again, so Clark County, Virginia, they probably have the most recent cost of community services study. The Weldon Cooper Center of UVA did one. And again, this was done in 2018. Again, the data, again, based upon this was similar to everything that I just presented as far as ratio is concerned. Again, they're very specific to Clark County. I think
Do you have those? Because I'd like to compare it to the 1994.
Those.
No, if it's got the three of them, it's pretty close.
They all kind of range. I mean, it just depends on which county, but they'll range from, say, $1.15 to $1.25, $30, something like that. And again, it's just sort of looking at that snapshot of time.
Yeah, so this is the one that's the old one. I'm trying to remember. I think the executive summary
was that in that chart?
The executive summary said on Clark County. Yeah.
I think there are three lines on that graph that just went by with lines on it.
Is the summary, like they summed everything up, did they come to some conclusion?
The conclusion was the same from these studies, mm-hmm. that what they show is that residential has a greater cost, right, than the revenue it brings, and that's, mm-hmm. that's what these particular studies show. Let me see here. This.
In other words, being over one, they're a net negative.
Basically over one, it has greater expense than revenue.
Right. You know, of any counties that only have businesses and agricultural in them, no housing?
I don't know.
I was just wondering about that.
Yeah.
And Tony, we're just following the data.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think here's some. Let me think here.
Just go to another graph right there in the middle. Got like three lines on it. I'm wondering if that's just the three lines.
So what conclusion are we trying to find?
I think the original question was, and again, I think there's different viewpoints. The additional question was, does residential cost or pay for itself, basically?
I think, again, a lot of philosophical questions regarding this. But again, and this was helpful in my mind to help to clarify it, because they give you a formula, and that formula is applied pretty much consistently in all the studies that we saw. It depends on where they were looking and what the county was doing, but they basically took, here's your revenues, here's your expenses related to that. But what they didn't necessarily look at was, well, are your expenses this cost because you just built a new high school? Are your demographics this? They don't include those kinds of factors. So while we could do a study, and in fact, we talked about at the TJPC that, this kind of a dialogue is happening. Would it be helpful for the Board of Supervisors to understand and for the community to understand those related costs? At the end of the day, what does it really tell you? Well, yes, you can say that, if your community is full of young people, your expense ratio is going to be higher than this. And if you just built a new high school, then you're going to have a higher cost of services than the community that has, a much older population and built a high school 50 years ago, as an example. Does that really matter? No, because at some point in time, the demographics will change and the needs will change in that county. And so I think what they all basically sum up at the end of the day is, take this data for what it is, but also look at the context of what your community needs, and then apply your judgment, your best judgment, based on that information. And that's what I took.
Yeah, and again, I think what you were talking about, Mr. O'Brien, and again, I think Ms. Booker sent this out, and I sent it to the board, and it was another study that was done in June of 2021, saying housing is critical infrastructure, and again, it's called social and economic benefits of building more housing. And again, you can look at these things in many different ways, and I think the big long and short of this study said that the U.S. is underbuilding housing, is basically what it said. And so again, there's data out there, there's information out there for either way, and kind of goes back to differing viewpoints and really what does the board value and what do they want to see happen in the locality.
So if you remember, I'd asked for a study because we were talking about whether it was financially a net positive or negative. And all the other softer bolt-ons and so on, I said, if you don't know whether it's costing you or benefiting you financially to have it, and that's what I've always said. I've just said, you build, generally speaking, when we build houses, rooftops, it's a net negative. It creates more burden. And in that study, they didn't take into account whether you just built a school and so on, and they took generalities and you applied them the same to everywhere, and I don't know that I saw one that it wasn't true. And so that would seem to say that it is a net negative. It might be a little bit less or a little bit more of a net negative if you bolt on some factors. But Moselle, to your question, not only did it say that it's a higher than one ratio, but some of the statements in that, and I'm quoting, on average, because residential land uses do not cover cost, they must be subsidized by other community land uses. Next one is, converting agricultural land to residential land use should not be seen as a way to balance local budgets. Next, the finding of COCS studies are consistent with those conventional fiscal impact analysis, which documents the high cost of residential development. What is unique about COCS studies is that they show that agricultural land is similar to other commercial and industrial uses. In nearly every community studied, farmland has generated a fiscal surplus to help offset the shortfall created by residential demand on public services. Two more lines, COCS studies can help local lenders discard the notion that natural resources must be converted to other uses to ensure fiscal stability. The final one, they also dispel the myth that residential development leads to lower taxes. Those are quite a bit more than just, it's a little bit higher than one.
So, we have our newly appointed planning commissioner say that, you know, she's looking for affordability in our area, and that she grew up in this area. And, you know, this isn't a person moving into the area, this is a product of somebody who grew up in this place. When you underbuild, when you don't have enough inventory, prices go up. What's more disturbing is when you look at the total cost of it, is if you create an artificial environment where it isn't affordable for the next generation to build wealth, then they can't carry on the same lifestyle that they were able to have when they were growing up. So I tongue in cheek mentioned, are there any counties out there that just have agricultural land? And there probably are some that just have that.
Some,
you know, and maybe you look at what services they have, and maybe those services are very limited compared to a more urban or a more suburban area. If you look at any county that just has businesses in it, I don't think they exist because those businesses need people to work there, right? So you can't just say it costs this much. And in the same study that you mentioned, if you look at the very last paragraph of that study, if you pull that up, it goes back and again highlights the fact that you have to look at the totality of the needs of your community. So to me, it is a somewhat irrelevant argument. Not to say that there is not value in saying, what is the cost of this particular development to our community at that particular time and point, but you still need to measure that against everything else that is happening in your community. I don't disagree that, you know, if we're looking and we're talking to a developer and they're offering a certain type of housing and we don't understand what that real cost is like, and we don't understand what they're not bringing to the table or what they could bring to the table, isn't a good idea, that, you know, we shouldn't be asking those questions. We should be educated and be asking those questions, but we should also be doing that in the whole context of, is this a benefit to the community overall? And so being pro-growth doesn't necessarily mean that you don't want smart growth. Being anti-growth, at the end of the day, also I think creates problems for your community that you're not anticipating today because you're not allowing that future generation to come in and thrive from that standpoint. So that's all I'll say about it.
Yeah. So then, and I'll finish with this odd that we were talking fiscally, and this report went to the financial direct impact of it. And so, again, the other soft bolt-ons and so on, not that they're not worth talking about, but we answered the question that we were pursuing in a couple meetings.
Sure. And the last thing was it, and I don't know who else.
Okay.
VACO, at VACO, we were having
this conversation.
This is a conversation. 10 minutes.
Yeah. At VACO, the Virginia Department of Housing made a presentation on this, on sort of the shortage of housing in Virginia specifically, and how that shortage of housing affects workforce development as well, too.
All right. There is a comparison. I used to own a farm in Highland, lived up there. The taxes were similar to what I pay here, but there's nobody up there. It's very, very, well, it's very unpopular.
So
it's very unpopulated, and a lot of their infrastructure struggles for it, I think.
What did you say?
A lot of their infrastructure struggles for it.
Yeah, and when I moved there in the 80s, they were building the dam, and so there was more activity, more people were living there, but as soon as that work went away, the employees left.
They had to go find work?
Yes, they had to go find work somewhere else, but you know, you can go too far one way, both ways. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yes, ma'am, I got you. Balance things out. That might be a good one to end all on right there.
Okay.
Thank you, ma'am. All right. Next.
Sorry, I think it's the board's not really looking for a study, I think.
No, and that's the thing. I mean, again, I mean, if the board wants to do a study, I'm sure there's a cost to the study, but I think if you're I think if you're looking at a general overarching theme, I think the information that was garnered kind of gives you that, but again, there's certainly other things that it doesn't account for.
The whole thing depending on one another. Yep. All right. Consent agenda. Minutes H, minutes of November 2nd, 2022. I, approval of open space agreement for Ronald G. and Carol Bragg. J, approval of open space agreement for Timothy A. and Laura R. Bruce. K, approval of open space agreement for William E. and Lori J. Caldwell. L, approval of open space agreement for Charles E. Carter and Linda J. Hughes. M, approval of open space agreement for Robert A. Gunnell, Jr. N, approval of open space agreement for Julia May Lacey. O, approval of open space agreement for Shannon B. and Mark A. Marshall. P, approval of open space agreement for Jessica S. Pace. Q, approval of open space agreement for Melissa and Adam Prophet. R, approval of open space agreement for Eric A. Shreves. S, approval of open space agreement for the Staggered Living Trust. T, CRMF-CEN Sewer Pipe, Mr. Stribble. U, CRMF-FCHS Air Handler Drive, Mr. Stribble. And B, FY23-FCPS Grant Supplemental Appropriations, Ms. Gillen. Is there anything we want to pull?
All I would ask is, I had a citizen email me on the way here and ask if it could be explained what open space agreement is, since there are so many of them.
Yeah, so, I mean,
it's basically an agreement between the landowner and the county for limiting the development of property and keeping it in agricultural type uses. It might be woodland.
It's another form of land use, and I believe it has to be 10 acres at a minimum. Is it 10 or 20? Mr. Miles, are you here?
He's
land use for open space. Is that 10 to 20 acres?
I believe it's 10.
I think it's 10.
Yeah.
And we can do this a lot.
What it does is, if you're in an open space agreement, your the value of your land is has a lower assessment to it.
But you can't develop it.
Yeah, yes. But you're not required, as opposed to agricultural use or forestal use, which has even lower, you don't have to report,
right?
You're not required to develop. You just basically say, I'm not going to change it. I'm not going to change it. That's all you say.
And I think forestal is actually a little bit higher than both, although I think at one point in time he was even moving out. Because a long time ago, I went back and looked at putting mine in open space, and if I would have, I'd save $10. I said, no, I'll just make a $10 donation to Fluvanna County.
Thank you, because that was more than I could put in an email while driving Sheriff.
Please don't.
But you get more of a break if you do forestal, agricultural, horticultural than you do with just open space.
Okay.
Not probably worth the reporting.
No, it's not a break, because mine is in agricultural and forestal, and I would have saved $10 if I put it in open space, because I went in there to look.
Okay.
And I told them, well, since I'd be taking $10 from the county, I can make my $10 donation. I'll leave it alone. All right. Do I have a motion to adopt the consent agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, second by Ms. Booker. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Is there any unfinished business?
Anywhere do we need to address what the school board's request today?
There's an official agenda item that'll be coming back to the board at the next meeting.
We don't have to make that decision until we're in the budget, I mean, to be honest with you, right?
Well, no, that'll be, I mean, again, they're requesting carryover of their
for this year, to use this year.
Fiscal year 20 funds into this budget year. Yeah, that's not tonight.
Where was it? So, new business?
Yeah, we have new business. I think that citizens need to know that we did go to a VACO conference for a couple of days. And Mr. Mike Sheridan, are you the chair of the, you're on the Education Steering Committee, but you're the chair. You're on the board now.
I'm not a chair. This is the only chair I sit in.
So you're on.
Ma'am, I'm sorry.
On the board.
Yes,
so you have a new position. You're on the board.
I was reappointed to the board of directors.
Right.
And I am on
several
committees.
Yeah. And this conference that happens each year that some of us go, some of us may not go.
It's Virginia Association of Counties. You said VACO. I just want to explain what that was.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Thank you. So we go to things that we learn what other counties are doing. And I went to the education one, and state people, senators were on that one. And they bring you up to date on different bills and things that they put in each year, and sometimes they put things in two and three times before it could be passed. The interesting one was the one on agriculture and forestry, which Chris also attended. And it's just a good way to really see what the state's doing and meet senators. And I think sometimes we can have our legislators carry a bill for us. I don't think we've ever done that. I don't know if I can think of anything, but I know you smart people will. Just to see, can we, push it through? Eric, you may come up with something.
I will tell you this much. We had a lot of stuff go through with when we lost Victor at the fire department. A lot of stuff going through where they're starting to look for certain types of cancers or certain things were not covered that are covered now. So it wasn't us as a county board, but from our county that went forward. And the drunk driving accident. I know Rob Bell went forward with some stuff about
he
that.
He did abuse.
Well, but he's pushed forward some stuff. There's stiffer penalties for some of our citizens that have been involved, been a victim of a drunk driving accident. So, I mean, you're right. We need to, if something comes up and we need to try and do that, we need to do a better job of getting it. But folks, I'm going to tell you right now, maybe I waste a lot of oxygen, but we go to them and try to talk to them as much as we can, as often as we can. And usually, on hands-free, so with the car radio, I'm usually talking to the superintendent as I'm driving to one of these points, what do we need to start talking about, especially with the Education Steering Committee. And so it's not just going down there just to take a couple of days off.
Yeah.
We are trying to work as hard as we can when we do it.
And I sat in on the education one as observer, and you presented us very well. It's a big group of people, and it's very hard sometimes to get your point across, or even to talk to the person, but we were well represented.
We as rural counties have to make sure we get heard, because the board is, and I love the board, I'm not saying anything bad about anybody on that VACO board with me, but when you have the high population counties, which will have 6, 7, 8 seats, and we got one. I represent Powhatan, Cumberland, Buckingham, I believe Nelson, Albemarle, and Fluvatt. So I got a phone call one day, Ms. Malik said, do it. I said, yes, ma'am.
I'll I'll just add to what Moselle's saying. On the forestry, Virginia Department of Forestry, gentlemen, a few of the quotes from him, talking about that timber, we don't have a natural threat in the state of Virginia. He said the only threat to forestry is development, building or solar. He said if we're going to have more solar, and this is, of course, an issue we're going to have to deal with more, if we're going to have to have less trees. You can't replace 6,000 acres of lost trees once that's gone. You don't put it back. Solar, he says, I'm still not sure how going green comes through cutting down green trees. And then he said that the loss of trees is a bigger issue in poor communities than it is more affluent communities. And then the commissioner of Virginia Department of Agriculture came up, said agriculture is Virginia's largest source of economic development, forestry is third. So a lot of people are shocked to find out that that's our largest source of economic development for the state. Soy is Virginia's largest export. More than half the export containers that leave Virginia are agriculture, which I found shocking. Virginia lost 50 million acres of farmland in 50 years. We lost 500,000 acres in the past 12 years. And the last two comments regarding solar, he said 60% of solar is going on forest land. And his last comment, if we don't have a solution, if we choose solar, we're going to have to give up something else. And he was being intentionally vague.
He compared hard oak with pine trees. Pine trees they come up faster, but they don't get as much revenue as hard oaks, and that's the thing that we're lacking. We need to replant those, and it takes years for them.
You can plant pines every 30 years. Mm-hmm. If you're talking about hardwoods, you're looking at least probably 50. Yeah. So.
That's
And the other thing that I forgot to mention that we do while we're down there is, folks, when we have issues that we're dealing with and we're trying to solve problems, that networking that we get to do, if we have a business coming to us, we can go talk to the ones that are dealing with that business right now and say, what are the good things? What are the bad things? What do we need to watch out for? And it's really great how we will all work with one another. Nobody asked what party you represent. Nobody asked if you're rural or suburban.
It was 95 counties.
Well, there was one guy bibbed overalls in a suit coat.
He does that once a year, and then there's some of us that show up in sweaters and blue jeans. All right. Thank you, Ms. Booker, for bringing that up in the nice words. I will now open the second round of public comment. Anyone wishing to address the board, please keep your comments. Please state your name and address. Keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and directed to the board. Is there anyone wishing to speak at this time? No one inside. Do I see anybody online? Seeing none, I will now close the second round of public comment. Mr. O'Brien.
Mr. Chair, I move the Brandon County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A3, Section 2.2-3711A6 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purposes of discussing real estate, disposition of county-owned property, investment of funds, 1, vehicle purchase agreement, 2, burned building, IFB, whatever the IFB.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Don't ask me what all those initials stand for sometimes. I have a motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. We are now in closed session. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Sylvania County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify to the best of each member's knowledge, 1, only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and 2, only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mrs. Eager. Mr. Fairchild?
Aye.
Mrs. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Mr. O'Brien, I believe you have another motion.
I do. Truck purchase agreement motion. I move the Board of Supervisors approve the purchase of agreement between Flavanna County and RK Chevrolet, Inc. for the purchase of a 2023 Chevrolet Silverado 1500, totaling $42,566.20, and further authorize the County Administrator to execute the agreement, subject to approval as to form by the County Attorney.
Second.
Motion is made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Seeger. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
I think you should read that one.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Booker and seconded by Ms. Seeger. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. We are adjourned.